Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for leaders of software development teams. I'm your host, Aaron Syme, and we have another special episode for you today. In our previous episode, number 44, we talked about contract software development in Europe. And I spoke with a couple of companies based in the Czech Republic, Ukraine, and with team members around Europe. We talked about a variety of topics, including what U.S. companies need to consider when working with remote teams based in Europe.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
Today, we're going to talk about nearshoring in Latin America. The term nearshoring refers to working with teams in your same or similar time zones. For U.S. or Canadian technology companies, that typically means working with software developers who are based in Latin America or the Caribbean. At my company, AgilityFeet, we've been helping U.S. companies work with software developers in Latin America since 2010. And I'll share some of our expertise in this episode, but I'm also bringing in other guests from other companies to make sure you hear from more than just our team. To help me explore this topic, we'll talk with two experts on the tech community in Colombia. While on a recent trip in Colombia, they were both kind enough to speak with me in person. I'll include excerpts from those conversations in this episode, and the full interview with each of them is posted to the Scaling Tech Podcast YouTube channel. And you can also find links to those videos in the show notes for this episode at scalingtechpod.com. Let's start with introductions from my guests. First, I took a short flight from our offices in Panama City, Panama, to Medellin, Colombia. While in Medellin, I spoke with Luisa Diaz, who has worked as a technology recruiter in technology sales and is a wonderful advocate for the tech community in Medellin.
I've come from a middle-class type of family, but I built a career out of technology and obviously out of sales. That's what I'm probably best known in LinkedIn, by harassing people so they get, you know, they get back to me on direct messaging. But being in tech obviously gave me a lot of, you know, room to operate, especially on the tech side, and especially in Medellin, where I feel we have like such potential and amazing opportunities to, you know, help other companies coming in here to grow and find, you know, the best fit for their businesses.
Next, I traveled to Bogota, where I had meetings with our legal team, since AgilityFeet has a Colombian subsidiary and we're growing our team in both Medellin and Bogota. While in Bogota, I stopped by the offices of Remoti and met with CEO and founder Pablo Miller.
I'm originally from the UK, was born there, bred there, lived there most of my life, but my mom's from Armenia Quindío, which is a coffee region. Growing up in the UK, very early stage, let's say in my headhunting career, I worked with fintechs just after 2008. Working with them, they started asking us about kind of, you know, where how do we internationalize? And in the UK, traditionally, companies would always go to Asia, go to India. Being half Colombian, I thought I need to go and check out what's happening there. This was almost 10 years ago, you know, next year. And I saw that there's a massive paradigm change here, that there's an amazing workforce that we like to call the modern workforce. And Remoti is doing basically that. We want to connect global opportunity locally. And we work with corporate companies, listed businesses that want to reallocate workforces to Latin America. And what we do is we provide the infrastructure. So we help you find the people, we hire the people, we also then retain the people.
The third person you'll hear from in this episode is Mariana Lopez, Chief Operating Officer for my company, AgilityFeet. Mariana and I have been working together since 2011, when she was one of our original team members in Latin America, initially working with our clients as a UX designer. Over the years, she quickly climbed the management ranks and has become a key leader in our team of software developers located around Latin America. If you've been a listener to this podcast for a while, then you'll recognize the name David Alfaro. David was not only my co-host in the Scaling Tech Podcast originally, but he's also been my business partner and how I got started working in Latin America. From our early days of building teams in Costa Rica for U.S. clients, Agility Feet now works with experienced technical talent across Latin America, building teams for companies in a variety of industries. In this next clip, Mariana talks a bit about our history and how our client base has changed over time.
It felt like at that time we were doing very small MVP based projects at Agility Feet, and it was really exciting because we were working with startups. But there lacked like a maturity of being able to bring in that like long research or that UX or the more complex challenges. And I feel like that's something that has really evolved together. Is now we are able to do a lot more complex projects. We bring in all that UX quality assurance, as well as everything that we were doing in the first place, which is, you know, the development, the engineering.
Now, Mariana and the rest of our leadership team have added offices in Panama City, Panama, where I live, and also in Colombia. Over a decade ago, we were initially staffing Ruby on Rails teams in Latin America, and now we build teams for a wider technical stack, and we launched a separate division called WebRTC Ventures that has become a globally recognized development agency which specializes in live video applications. Most recently, we've added a build, operate, transfer model to our set of services, which is where we can start with a U.S. client by building a staff augmentation development team in Colombia, but then over time, transfer that team to the client as a fully owned subsidiary of their U.S. company. This optional add-on to our staff augmentation model helps to make sure that clients never feel vendor lock-in with us and allows them to more directly control and operate their work in Latin America. As a final bit of background on Agility Feet, in the next clip, Mariana talks about what attracts our clients to working with us.
To be fair, they're probably reaching out to us initially because of cost. There are significant cost savings when you hire nearshore developers, but I would hope that people that come to us through references and that understand a little bit more our methodology or our mentality is that we're able to make their vision happen. It's not sometimes a client comes to us and they're like, this is what I want you to do. And while we're on the rails and on the running, we're like, this was your goal, but we can get to it faster. We can get to it better. And we drive it together. And we've come up with a lot of creative solutions, a lot of good projects that, you know, started off a little bit less ambitious or started off with different ideas, but we're able to achieve that same goal. I think they come to us because we have talented people that are willing to take risks, that are willing to find solutions for interesting challenges, and that are good communicators, that are willing to sit down, brainstorm, think about the different solutions. And it's not just about, you know, here's your set of requirements, here's your code, everybody go home. It's more about building that relationship, building that team, building that trust, and coming up with actual products and actual solutions. And I think that's a really big difference.
Now, the topic of this episode is nearshoring in Latin America. And so I'll quickly define nearshoring first before talking about why Latin America. When you outsource work, it means sending part of your company's work to an outside team. And outsourcing could mean anywhere globally. When we're talking about U.S. companies, the term is most closely associated with offshoring work to Asia or India. I talked more about this in the previous episode of the Scaling Tech Podcast, number 44, on global software development. Nearshoring, though, is a more specific term that means that you're outsourcing work in your same or similar time zones. The big benefit of this is collaboration and communication, since you can talk with your remote team in your own same working hours. Nearshoring started with outsourcing of business processes like call centers, where companies would build their contact center in a less expensive country to save money. In this episode, we're talking about nearshoring software development. And as you'll hear from my guest, there is a cost benefit to this, but it's about much more than spending. In software development, we frequently deal with shortages in technical talent. And nearshoring is a great way to find additional talent while at the same time experiencing some cost savings. So why Latin America? For U.S. or Canadian companies, the obvious place to nearshore is in Latin America and the Caribbean. Even a team in eastern Brazil still partially overlaps their workday with a company on the west coast of California. And much of Latin America sits squarely in the middle of U.S. time zones. My guests in this episode will talk about Colombia in particular, but these concepts apply to wherever your team is based in Latin America, and all of my guests have worked with technical teams throughout the hemisphere. As Pablo discusses in this next clip, U.S. companies are looking to Latin America not just because of the time zone benefits, but also because they want to find additional talent and retain that talent.
A lot of our clients now they already have, let's say, outsourced teams in Asia or in that time zone, and they want to bring it back closer to their time zone. So the first answer to you is, why do people look at Latin America? It's number one time zone. You know, I think we're 1 hour difference to New York, 2 hour, 3 hour difference to California. Secondly, it's that, you know, people here are ultimately, if you provide good conditions, a good career development plan, Latinos are very, very loyal people. So if we look at kind of what's happened in the United States, the war on talent, graduates, you know, moving every 1 or 2 years, the Gen Zs, the millennials, if you don't give them a promotion after day two, they're going to leave, or salary increase, or a vice president title. So really, it's about kind of that retention piece here, that if clients do come here, people stay. Number three, they come here because the technical skill set is very good. So outsourcing is not something that's just come up with all these sexy HR tech companies that have started the last 5 years. This has been around, I'm sure you've seen it for many years. But ultimately, you know, the level of talent here, having just in Bogota alone, we have over 200,000, let's say, mid to senior devs at the moment.
Luisa also talked about the strong work ethic in Colombia and how the business culture in Colombia is less hierarchical than most Asian cultures. As she notes, this is important because we don't want team members who just say yes to everything, regardless of how unrealistic the request may be. If we want healthy team dynamics, then team members need to feel like their voice will be heard. And it helps if their culture matches the U.S. business culture, where we expect people to speak up if they disagree with a decision or a timeline. You may also note Luisa using a term paisa in this episode, by the way. That's a nickname in Colombia for people from the Medellin region where she lives.
Colombia and Antioquia, which is the state that, you know, where Medellin is the capital of, culturally, I think it offers something very unique. And if we go back to, you know, the traditional Antioquia, you know, person in what you will think about demeanor of people from here, is that something that, you know, we all have in common is this passion for, like, work. Mm-hmm. So we were taught, you know, from since little that you need to work really hard and build a name and be somebody. So that's something that it's, like, very within our roots. So we take that into the work environment. So we always want to go the extra mile. We always want to do more. We always want to participate in, give our ideas. So I think that's something that's very characteristic of people from here. And a lot of, you know, a lot of big companies love that because they come from traditional, you know, outsourcing locations like India, where you just say, this is, you know, this has to be done. Yes to everything. And, right. And you don't ever see them, like, you know, being out there as, you know, as Colombians and paisas, for example.
As I mentioned, Luisa and Pablo are both in Colombia. But what about other regions of Latin America? Every country in Latin America has their own story, their own unique cultural aspects, and their own tech scenes. These differences affect what the tech culture and the hiring culture are like, and they're not the same everywhere. For instance, in this clip, Pablo talks about Brazil.
Yeah, so obviously if we look at Brazil, you know, Brazil's, we like to call it kind of our wealthy neighbor. Brazil's, what, you know, 20 years advanced from Colombia. You know, the technology scene there is more established. There's bigger companies. But then the war on talent is higher there and retention is harder there. You know, so obviously, let's say it's quicker to get into Brazil, but it's definitely more expensive. It's easier to identify candidates in Brazil, but can you retain them?
At Agility Feet, we work with team members from all around Latin America. And that's not easy if you're not from Latin America or familiar with remote work in general. Even though the pandemic made companies more open to remote work and global workforces, it's still not easy. Mariana and I have been working remotely since well before the pandemic, and she talks about that a bit here.
The landscape has changed, but I think one of the things that we did is we figured out how to make remote work and how to make a culture around people that are remote. And I feel like that is always very refreshing, that feeling that, you know, it's not just something that somebody forced you onto. Now, a lot of companies do remote. They're kind of afraid that that might go away, but we've learned how to bridge those gaps, and it's in our DNA, right? We've always been remote, and we've always made sure that you know, relationships can grow, people can express their concerns, and I feel like that's one of the things that we still do really well is it doesn't feel like it's a distant team. It's still a very close team, even though we're all in very different parts of the world, of Latin America.
So when you're nearshoring software development in Latin America, you can take two general approaches. The first is to simply contract with the best talent you can find, regardless of where they're physically located. That strategy works for many companies, and it's what we've been doing at Agility Feet for well over a decade. The second option is to choose a single country and concentrate all of your development hiring there. If it's important to your company culture that it's easy to visit everyone in person or to have them be able to work together in an office at least part of the time, then you need to decide on a single country in Latin America. This is also beneficial if you work in an industry with extra security and privacy regulations where you need to be able to more closely control where your team works, what networks they work on, and the computers that they use for their work. For example, at Agility Feet, we decided to first open an office in Panama City, Panama in 2019. This office focused on our QA and testing efforts for our clients because we wanted to have a single location for that team where they could go into an office together and easily share mobile devices between them for application testing. That's what that office is still doing today, but now we also have an office in Colombia, and we focus our hiring in Colombia when we work with clients for whom it's important that their team is in a single location. We also focus on Colombia when working with clients who might want to take advantage of the build-operate-transfer model that I mentioned earlier, where we eventually transfer our team into a subsidiary owned by the client. So let's talk more about what makes Colombia attractive in particular. Even if you don't choose Colombia for your nearshore software development team, this will give you ideas on how to select the region that you work in.
I like to think about Colombia as the greatest satellite location if you want to bring together like the two continents. So if you think about it, like we are right in the equator.
Right.
So we kind of like help connect distributed teams all over the region. So if you have teams, for example, in Mexico, and then you have people in Argentina as well, then Colombia makes it, you know, makes sense. It helps your operation kind of like, you know, communicate better. So I love the fact that we have not only the, you know, the time zone advantage, but I think geographically we are privileged.
Luisa shared with us a number of reasons why a U.S. company should consider Colombia.
Colombia is actually one of the most business-friendly countries in the region. And that means that you will have a lot of, you know, government support, you know, for specific industries. Tech is one that receives a lot of, like, tax incentives and things around that nature. So it makes it easy for somebody that wants to, you know, create a startup here or, like, build product or, like, do some investment because it really, you know, it's really friendly. I think another one that I can think of is even though we have a smaller economy than, you know, like if you compared us with Argentina and Brazil, I think Colombia offers a wide range of not only like industry expertise, but also reassurance that it is going to be like a economically stable country, politically stable, even though, you know, we have had our, you know, ups and downs, but I think we are very stable right now. So that's also something that, you know, really helps, you know, decision-making processes for, you know, executives and people thinking on like opening something here.
Another good reason to consider Colombia is simply the size of the technical talent pool in general. As Pablo mentioned earlier, there are over 200,000 mid to senior level software developers in Colombia. In addition, Colombia is coming out of a particularly strong growth phase, which means that there are more developers available to be hired than in the recent past.
Unfortunately, Colombia was in a bit of a tech bubble. So let's say before, you know, the United States had all these issues with regional banks imploding. We had issues with, let's say, interest rates. There's a lot of VC money here. You know, SoftBank had an $8 billion LATAM fund. Several of that was deployed in Colombia. So as we saw, you know, a lot of companies received funding. They grew their teams, but they weren't able to get a Series B or Series C. So what this means is for kind of well-established US firms that want to come here now and establish a serious business, a serious team, there is a large talent pool available of local Colombia talent, which is obviously great for you guys. So great for the ecosystem, bad for the entrepreneurial local startup scene.
Now, of course, even within Colombia, there are different regions. Bogota is the largest city, and Medellin also has a large tech community and strong infrastructure. And so typically you would choose to locate in one of those cities, but you could still hire developers remotely from anywhere in the country. For instance, Agility Feeds Colombia subsidiary is officially located in Bogota, and our operations manager is in Bogota. But we recruit developers in Medellin also, and we can work with someone from elsewhere in the country. In this next clip, Luisa talks about the growth of the technical community in Medellin in particular.
Medellin specifically has been growing as a tech hub for the past decade, pretty much. So we come from understanding systems engineer as the person would, you know, that would clean your equipment, you know, like, and install a software, to having, you know, people here producing great technology and developing great platforms for all sorts of industries. So Medellin specifically has a vibrant market for startups specifically, but also big companies have landed here. Take, for example, Accenture, IBM, Globant. They have hired tons of developers throughout the years, and they continue growing. So I think it's a market that is only going to grow thanks to, you know, entrepreneurs and companies that are seeing Medellin and Colombia in general as a great spot to land and expand to the whole region.
Like most countries, Colombia has a complicated history. Unfortunately, Colombia is still very strongly associated with drug violence, Pablo Escobar, and a long-running civil war in the last century that ravaged the country. Colombia has changed dramatically in the last 20 years, but scars do remain, and these painful parts of Colombian history have been dramatized and sadly even romanticized in film and pop culture. Luisa very generously shared with us her perspective as someone who grew up in the Medellin region during those tumultuous years. And also, when she lived in the U.S. for a while as a young adult, it also affected how people saw her as a Colombian. Luisa talked about how much the country has changed since then.
It's day to night to, you know, to say something about that change. I really want to be candid on this topic because it's something that you know, Medellin, obviously, we built our fame, right? We got famous probably for, like, all the wrong reasons. And I lived it, like, when I traveled outside of Colombia and I went to the U.S. under my au pair program, which is like a nanny type of thing for those who are unfamiliar with the word. So I lived it. Like, I remember in my first month with my host family, they got a painter to do something, right? And he saw me, and obviously he saw me like so different because I'm not, you know, white, blue eyes, blonde, so I'm completely different. So he saw me, he goes like, oh my God, you look so exotic. And I'm like, cool, I guess. And then he goes on and asked me, you know, where are you from? And I was like, I'm from Colombia. And he was like, oh, so you're cousins with Pablo and, you know, cocaine. And I was like, man. So that moment, like, really did something to my brain.
Yeah.
And now, even though I lived through, you know, part of those years, I have, like, memories as a child, you know, like, going to the balcony and have, you know, like, and seeing people, like, you know, dead on the street, to go out to Medellin and just witness, like, such a different thing. Like, it's so vibrant. Like, everyone wants to be here. Everyone wants to do business here. Everyone wants to do something with a Colombian. Everyone was, I don't know, like, it's insane. So the change is such an amazing change. And I think part of that social transformation that we have in the city has a lot to do with science, technology, and innovation. Yeah. So that's why, you know, technology for me is the base for a lot of things happening right now in the city and being known for all the right reasons now. And part of what I do, like, you know, by talking to people and doing my own network work and doing so many things, is like also to educate on why Colombia and Medellin is, you know, such an amazing thing and try to, you know, and try to break down those stereotypes, because it's like, it's hard. Like, it's something that I can't believe still, like, you know, at my 38 years of age, I still have to, you know, tell the story about how Medellin was in the past and then how the transformation happened and then why Medellin is, like, so cool, you know? So it's such an interesting topic. And again, like, I'm so passionate about it. I'm such a big advocate for my city, for my country. And I just, you know, I just love when people like you, like other, you know, business owners, they come in here and they see all the amazing things and they go back to their countries and they tell the story. Oh, my God, I had the best time in Medellin. And then suddenly this person brought 10 people more. And then, you know, it's like it's a viral loop, if you think about it.
Right.
So now we are now having problems. I think those are good problems to have, which is like, the rent is increasing, or, like, you know, things around that nature, but all for good reasons. So that's kind of like makes me really happy.
Medellin is a wonderful example to me of how global software development and the global economy can change things for the better. When we work as international teams, there are business benefits as well as cultural benefits, since we get to know people from different cultures and countries. But the most positive thing that the global economy can do is to help lift a region out of poverty and violence and provide career opportunities that give people a more hopeful future. Pablo may have grown up in the UK, as you can tell from his accent, but his family ties to Colombia are deep. He has also seen how much Colombia has changed, and he talked about how much the lifestyle has improved in Colombia in his lifetime.
For example, the first thing is it's just safety. You know, Colombia is still Colombia. However, you know, you can see from my office, the houses there for $4 million. There's flats, you know, for several hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the price of real estate here has obviously gone up, because it just shows the kind of the type of people with certain incomes that live here. So with that, it means that, you know, you're not just, you know, you're not living in the Wild West, as a lot of people think we are. Number two, if you, you know, let's say that stage of your life, you've got children, the local schools here are very good. You're able to have your children to study IB, the international, I can't remember the name, but like, exactly. And the teachers from the UK, they're from the US. So that means that if you're living here, your children's, you know, the quality of the education is as good as the US, and their ability to get into a good Ivy League school is there as well. In terms of, you know, quality of life, I've just come back from the coffee region. It took me half an hour to get there. The flight cost me $50. So for me, you know, being brought up in the UK, the fact that I can go coffee picking on the weekend is just amazing. Also, you're an hour away from the Caribbean. That means that on the weekends, you can, you know, go and sit in Cartagena, eat amazing food. It's just naturally a culture-rich city, you know, with everything that you can see there. And most importantly, Colombians are just very happy people. You know, when you talk to people, they say good morning to you. They'll do whatever it takes to make you feel good. So the quality of life here is very good.
The improved lifestyle and economy in Colombia are partly due to the growth of the tech industry there. And that can be seen in how many big U.S. tech companies have an office in Bogota or Medellin. This has paved the way for others to start operations in Colombia, too, for their technology business, as Pablo further discussed with me.
I like to say that Colombia and South America, just they're ready for business. You know, we've had such a horrid history. You know, we've really struggled. But we've reached a stage now that, let's say, this generation, it's kind of past them now. You know, Colombia is a cool place. As cheesy as it sounds, you know, the only risk is wanting to stay. So really, that workforce, they're well-traveled. They've got friends from outside. They understand technology. They speak great English. They're ready to work for, you know, ambitious businesses. So really, what we're seeing here is that as U.S. companies are now understanding the benefits of Latin America, they are turning off teams in Asia. They are turning off teams in that time zone, and they're looking to build it closer to home.
The world we live in today contains many hopeful stories like Colombia, but it also contains many ongoing tragedies and conflicts. As my guest talked about in the previous episode of the Scaling Tech podcast, the war in Ukraine has disrupted the global IT workforce, and other conflicts in the Middle East are destabilizing the global economy in general. Sadly, we have to be aware of the possibility of geopolitical conflict anywhere in the world. Even life in the U.S. has felt much less stable than it did when I was younger. These are all important reasons to consider a global workforce for your tech company. The pandemic showed us that having your whole team in a single office is not always possible, nor is it required for productive work. And the other global conflicts and natural disasters of recent years have shown that having all of your operations based in a single city may not be advisable either. The geographic and economic diversity of Latin America offers an opportunity for U.S. companies to address some of those risks while also seeing cost savings. And on that note, let's talk more about cost savings and quality in Latin America. My various guests all talked about how you can achieve cost savings in Latin America, but it's not the only consideration. In fact, even within the same team, you might not see the same type of cost savings on each individual. The big lesson of global outsourcing is that you have to strike a balance between cost savings and strong talent that will deliver high-quality work. My colleague Mariana talked about this in the context of how we attract talent to our team at Agility Feed.
Definitely. There's several things, I think. We're competitive in terms of salary, which is also great. We are also, I think, we present them with interesting challenges. Sometimes in some of these countries, all the software developers or all the QAs, they work for the big bank or the big finance company. And so there's not a lot of diversity in where they can focus their energies and their talents and their learning and growth path. So I think when we come and we interview, they're like, what kind of project can I work on? And that's always fun to see, because the kind of people that we want to attract and the people that come to us are looking for that extra challenge or looking for that different kind of flavor. I also feel like they stay because we foster a culture of belonging and being part of a team. And you know, there's open communication, as much as possible, a flat feeling of hierarchy that I think is very attractive to software developers and people in engineering in general. And no fluff, I would say. it's not about, like, you know, the pizza parties, but more about, like, the big things. My work is nice and I come to it and I can do interesting and fun things and I'm well compensated for it.
Luisa also talked about the importance of blending senior and junior talent in your team.
A trend that I see a lot, especially when I was, like, you know, selling staff augmentation services, a lot of companies, they wanted to only hire senior engineers and they forgot about the juniors because they don't have the time to train them and So what companies like, you know, the one that I was working for and many others were doing at that time was, you know, like, okay, so let's start, you know, turning our eyes to junior people so we can start, like, you know, training them and getting them ready so we can start, you know, complementing those senior teams with a little bit more of a fresh talent and people with, you know, ideas and crazy experiments in their heads. So that's another approach.
Pablo framed this cost conversation as a rebalancing of workforces across borders. I liked his perspective on how this feeds into not only a career path for young technical talent, but also what he described as the Colombian dream.
We like to work with clients that don't think, okay, we're going to build a team in LATAM and this is a cheaper workforce, them and us, but it's more about, let's say, rebalancing workforce across borders. So for the senior folks, they should most certainly be paid something similar to what they're being, you know, their colleagues in the US are. But let's say for that layer underneath, that is where there is salary arbitrage. That is where clients can save money and build a career development plan so that the younger developers can see that as they grow up in that organization, they can ultimately achieve what we call the Colombian dream, which is, you know, ability to earn in US dollars, ability to have similar income to people in the US, but actually stay in Colombia, where the families are, where their own culture is. And, you know, socially speaking, that's fantastic because you're building a new society here.
Finally, on the topic of cost, Mariana talked about how price-based thinking is the most common mistake that companies make. And in our work at Agility Feet, we have actually seen clients who initially rejected us as too expensive, but they then came back to us after failed attempts to deliver high-quality software with a lower-cost offshoring firm.
One of the most common mistakes the clients make is thinking that all nearshoring firms are the same and thinking like, oh, I'll just go to the one that offers, you know, the best rate. And they often come back. I love that. We've had some of those experiences. I'm so sorry for the clients that came back and they're like, this is unusable. I need you to start again, or can you fix this for us? And we are like, yes, we can, and we will. And we sometimes have to say like, hey, no, we have to start over. And it's sort of that feeling of like thinking that just because the model works and they've seen it work, sometimes it will work for them if it's not mindful. Like I said in the beginning, when we meet with a client, we try to understand what they like, what they don't like, what are the kind of talent that they need, and we try to push it forward. And sometimes when you think of like staff augment, you're like, it's just the person that I got. But often behind the scenes, it's the little Slack messages from me that are like to my team members, hey, remember, we want you to be prepared for demo. We want you to do this and some sort of some guidance that we do behind the scenes, additional resources that they have, like trainings or templates that we use. And, you know, that often sometimes is behind the scenes to the client, but it makes all the difference.
High quality communication skills and high quality education are a must for agile teams and for international collaboration. My guest talked about the quality of the education system in Colombia, and Luisa talked about how early English education starts for many Colombians.
In here, English is a requirement for school. So yeah. I remember like when I was in kindergarten, having English as a subject, and that's a requirement, you know, for public and private schools. So that goes all the way through college, where you have to, you know, prove that you are proficient in a second language. Usually people here, they choose English instead of, you know, Portuguese, which is also very popular, and other ones. But English is mainly the one that drives education at all levels. You'll see, for example, here that we have also schools for, you know, like that are specialized in German or French. So you have like the German school, the French school, and so on and so forth. But English is definitely dominant. So that's, you know, as I started. So accents obviously are going to vary. You will find somebody with more mild and, you know, people with a little bit more of the paisa on the background. But I think in terms of proficiency, English is definitely a good thing and something that you will find across industries.
Luisa told me about how companies sponsor coding boot camps to attract young talent before they have a lot of industry experience. She also talked about how many of the universities encourage internships, and so even a young graduate can offer relevant experience.
Colombia is home to really good universities, like world-class university, I will dare to say. One example is, for example, Andes University, Javeriana, EAFIT, which is here, University of Antioquia, the National University as well. I think those are great examples. And all of them have, I wouldn't say different approach, but a very specific approach to tech. So you will see AFE that is really good with their computing science programs. And they also are probably top in terms of alliances with private and public organizations. So they allow students, or they open the doors to students like early in their, you know, in their majors, like while they are studying, to expose themselves to like corporate environments and, you know, like participate in research and innovation projects. So AFIT is such a great example because they really cover not only the education piece, but they also help connect the students with great internship opportunities. They are very well connected with, you know, companies doing or providing staff augmentation services or like product development services. So, you know, this young generation have early access to, like, you know, newest technologies, great projects, and obviously companies from the US. Yeah. So I think, you know, it definitely, the approach varies from university to university, but just to give you a couple of examples.
Pablo also highlighted the importance of the internship programs in Colombia.
Here in Colombia, they have an amazing scheme that before you graduate, you actually have to go and work in a local company, and you have to be treated as a normal employee. So this means that a lot of these computer science grads, they're able to, you know, have a year working either for a big corporate or software house, you know, working with senior devs that can tell them kind of what good looks like.
Okay, so you've found your tech team in Latin America. What are some best practices for working with them? We have a lot of experience in this at Agility Feet, and so Mariana shared how important we believe proactive communication skills are.
The most important thing is understanding if a developer will fit into the culture. And when you're talking about building a team, you're talking about understanding what that client likes and understanding what we like, right? And sometimes those are not the same things, and that's fine because that's great. You can find the right person for the right team. And so I think that that's the most important. I would say there are some things that across our clients we look for in our developers and our team members because they make a difference. So I think one of the most important things is communication. You would tend to find that with the projects that we work on, they are fast-paced, they're challenging, you hit blockers, they're collaborative. And if there's somebody that is just waiting for the Scrum Master or the project owner to say like, oh, hey, it looks like you're having a trouble, or it looks like you're having issues, or you don't have any tickets assigned, it's not going to work, right? Those people quickly, very, very quickly don't make it in our team. We have to have somebody that's like communicating, that's like telling us what are we missing as a team. We're stronger for that, and that's something that I look for in everybody that joins the team. And I also feel like with different time zones, with remote, if you're not able to have good conversations, written conversations and spoken conversations, it just doesn't work. I think that's our first and main and most important filter. The second one is closely related, but it's being outcome drivers and not passengers. So we'll often see people that are just waiting for the solution and that aren't like challenging the status quo. I like people that drive. I like people that take initiative. They're willing to say like, hey, you know, I know you want this video chat, but what if we did this differently? What if we used this piece of software that's already built? What if your chat was built on an existing library? It'll save us time. You'll be able to validate the idea. And sometimes you're like, yes, that's exactly what I wanted. How didn't I see that? And so we're looking for people that are willing to do that and willing to drive the conversation, drive the initiative, and get us there. I also think that we are looking for team members. We're not looking for resources. I think that that's so important. Um, you you know, you'll find a lot of software firms that will say like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll take care of everything. You won't even notice we're here. We're just gonna punch out the work. And like I said, there's space for everybody. That's not us. We're gonna be vocal. We're gonna be present. We're gonna be part of your team. And we feel it like as throughout our journey, you grow attached to the products that you work on. You care about them. You become part of the team. And that's, I think, how it should feel. Or at least that's what we're looking for. It makes a difference, right? At the end of the day, if you believe in what you're building, if you believe in the people that you're working with, you're willing to go that extra mile. You're willing to put the effort and the brain power not only to do your job, but also think what's great for the company and for the client.
If you want to attract the best talent, then you need to provide them with interesting work and a great work environment, as Louisa discussed with me.
What's moving the needle with engineers right now is the quality of your projects and your vision of like how this person comes in and play a key role in your product vision. Right. So more about the long term and offering exciting projects and, you know, like working for dynamic companies, you know, like the whole AI, Gen AI and everything right. in between. So I think today, I think the skill is like leaning more towards that type of recruitment style. So coming in with strong projects, great technology, a good, you know, a good team to be around.
I also like this next story that Pablo told me about how rewarding it was for him to see one of his clients really embrace the idea of having a team in Colombia and how important this buy-in was to the success of their venture.
You know, we have a great study with a client of ours called Cezl, a Minnesota-based buy now, pay later company. You know, they were 500 people. They had scaled down to 200 people. Market cap went from 30 million to now recently it's about 1.2 billion last week. They've now scaled up to 350 people. And one of the reasons of that turnaround was obviously building a team in LATAM, cost savings, but most importantly was getting the buy-in of their local engineers in Minnesota, in New York. They're also kind of a remote business, but they actually have to buy in and working with the Latin engineers. Mm-hmm. And obviously they want to hire locally, but then it was like the company convinced them to hire outside. So it was actually, you know, really beautiful to watch actually Americans feeling comfortable working with Latinos because that just shows that these Latinos or Colombians in this case, they're respected by the senior US engineers. And that just shows the ability of technical skill, ability to communicate and ability to work harmoniously with a US counterpart.
Pablo talked about other things that developers value as well, such as payment methods and visiting with their clients in person.
If you're able once a year to have a meetup in the US, it means a lot, right? Because, you know, Latinos, Colombians love to visit, and then it feels like they're actually working for an American company. Number two, I think the way payments are done. So, you know, you and I briefly discussed is that, you know, there's, you know, inflation is very high here. So, you know, the dollar also is fluctuating all the time against a peso. So if you're earning in dollars here or earning in pesos, there needs to be a way that you can safeguard that. So what companies need to do is have the ability to have, let's say, folks to be paid in US dollars, but then to be also paid in local currency. So they can, let's say, day-to-day expenditure, they have earned in pesos, but if they're able to then have US dollars saved up for, you know, for their retirement, etc., it's a key thing for retention here.
As we wrap up today's episode about nearshoring software development in Latin America, I hope that you have come away with inspiration from our guests on where and how to build your team in Latin America. We talked a lot about Colombia in particular, but the advice you've heard in this episode today applies elsewhere too. We also mainly discuss software developers as a job title, but I want to emphasize that you can find any type of technical team role in Latin America for your US company. The combination of tech experience, English skills, and proximity mean that you can recruit for UX and UI designers, product managers, software developers, test engineers, and DevOps roles, as well as marketing, sales, customer support, and other adjacent roles. Our team at Agility Feet hails from all around Latin America, and as Mariana discusses, one thing that unites us is a passion for building great software.
we really like building good quality software. That's the difference. You will receive pushback if you have ideas that are not great. But we will be passionate about building great quality products.
On a personal note, this next quote from Pablo really resonated with me. Like him, what has always motivated me about our work at Agility Feet is how we can help software developers around Latin America become a part of the global economy, and how our U.S. clients also benefit from the wider perspective that they gain when working with a team in Latin America.
It's a simple thing that one person's spending is another person's income. And as crass as it sounds, if we're able to bring more jobs, put money into, you know, people's hands, it's just simply going to help the economy. And I've got an unusual background that I'm extremely English. My English grandfather taught at Cambridge University. My Colombian grandfather was an electrical engineer in the coffee region here. You know, part of my mission and what gets me out of bed is I simply want to just introduce people to this wonderful country. But most importantly, it's like we can help U.S. companies turn around with efficiency, with people. And that's what gets out of bed every morning.
Thank you to Pablo for those words. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning, too. And thanks to Louisa and Mariana for their time sharing their expertise with me in this episode also. To see my full conversations with each of them and to learn more about their companies, check out the show notes for this episode at scalingtechpod.com. You'll find links to their full interviews on YouTube. And of course, you can learn more about our services at Agility Feet by visiting agilityfeet.com. So thank you for joining me for this special episode of the Scaling Tech Podcast. This wraps up our series on global software development, and our next episodes will be with guests on other topics that are relevant to your work as an engineering manager. So make sure to subscribe to the Scaling Tech Podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this episode.